Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before that name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-$4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture. You can drive it away today. Act now, and receive as our gift to you. They come in all colors, one size fits all. No muss, no fuss, no spills. You tired of kitchen drudgery? Everything must go. Going out of business, going out of business, going out of business sale. 50% off original retail price. Skip the middleman.
Yeah, you have it tuned to KBOO Portland. It is just a few seconds before 11 a.m. And coming up is Health Watch with host Dr. David Naiman. Today he interviews Kat Ellis, author of Prepper's Natural Medicine, about safely creating home medicines when a major disaster has rendered doctors, hospitals, and pharmacies unavailable. And you'll want to stay tuned at 11:30. We're going to hear Food Sleuth Radio with guest Amy Mondlock, community organizer with the Toxic Taters Coalition campaign, discussing pesticide drift and how it is harming people, animals, and the environment. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
Attention, KBOO members. You are invited to give your feedback on KBOO's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KBOO board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance to help define KBOO's guiding principles and priorities. Visit KBOO.fm to review the draft mission and vision statements and submit your comments. Paper copies of the draft statements are also available at the station. Comments are due July 17th. If you have questions, please contact Monica Beamer at monica@kboo.org. Thank you for contributing to the development of KBOO's mission and vision statements and for your support of community radio.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is herbalist Kat Ellis. Ellis is a member of the American Herbalist Guild and a teacher of herbal medicine, and she's also interested in survivalism and homesteading. Through these interests, Kat became interested in the art of prepping, the learning of hundreds of practical hobbies from gardening to canning to self-defense. She has since merged her love of herbal medicine and her love of prepping to write her book, Prepper's Natural Medicine, Life-Saving Herbs, Essential Oils, and Natural Remedies for When There Is No Doctor. Welcome to Health Watch, Kat Ellis.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start out with the choice that you made, Kat, to focus on natural medicine when looking at disaster preparedness. Why look at natural medicine in terms of this versus just medicine in general?
Oh, well, there's many reasons why. First of all, it was my background. I obviously was an herbalist. I've been working with herbs for a long time, and I have a love of the plants, and I've seen what they can do. But I've also, I'm a licensed massage therapist, and that, you know, so holistic care was sort of my background anyway. So it's my go-to. However, there's other practical concerns for it, such as, you know, when we think of a disaster happening, and we think of people, you know, making a run on the grocery store is not the only place that there could be a run. Where people, you know, just buy out everything on the shelves. That can also happen at your pharmacy, and that can also happen, how should I put this, with there can be other disruptions to resupply to the pharmacy, to a hospital, and it just may not be available to you. There's also sort of a little bit of a target on medical facilities like hospitals and pharmacies, let's say during periods of civil unrest. They're some of the first places to get raided. And, you know, I don't know about anyone else, but I don't want to be that parent that's fighting with another parent in a pharmacy to get needed medicine for one child, you know, if that were to be the case. So I don't want to be anywhere near that. I want to have my stuff squared away. And if the disaster were to be something very long term, then I want to be able to resupply that myself. So I don't know that many people that have the chemistry background to, you know, maybe have, you know, to be able to whip up a batch of Cipro in their house, you know. But you can certainly put together herbal antibiotics and so on like that at home very simply with very, very easy-to-make formulas and easily obtainable ingredients.
And renewable ingredients, as you're saying.
Exactly, yeah.
So, well, let's talk about assembling an herbal first aid kit. Let's start with an obvious entry point, wound care. What are some of your thoughts on wound care and natural medicine?
Well, you know, you've got a number of things to be concerned about. And it depends on the type of wound, obviously, as well, and where the wound is. But you're going to want to be able to clean it, and you're going to want to get that healed up as quickly as possible, because in a scenario where, let's say, you don't have access to a medical facility, even a small cut can become a big problem. You can end up with lymphangitis going, you know, tracking up your arm or something that you, you know, you don't want coming from a wound. So you're going to want something that you can flush the wound out with and get it clean. And if you want something that's really, really, really simple to put on a wound to help it to heal, especially, let's say, a burn, like, a second-degree burn or something where the blister has popped or something like that, you can just apply honey if you want. Honey is probably one of the simplest medicines you can use. I know it's not an herb, but herbalists tend to have a bunch of natural ingredients that they're not necessarily plants in their repertoire, but honey is excellent for all sorts of wounds. It's in my first aid kit. It never spoils. It is very antibacterial. It deals with bacteria in a number of ways. On one front, when honey comes in contact with the body's fluids, such as in an open wound, it manufactures minute amounts of hydrogen peroxide. So you get this sort of slow, you know, low dose of it on a perpetual basis. So it's not like dumping a bunch of hydrogen peroxide on a wound. It's a very slow procedure. So it's not necessarily going to burn and bubble and all of that, but it's getting this nice, slow, continuous dose. And you can certainly clean it out and put some new honey in there and so on and so forth. But honey is also very high in sugar, and sugar is something that has been used to pack wounds prior to antibiotics for a long time. People in various wars, you know, with their war injuries would end up packing wounds with sugar and avoid getting really serious infections through that. So honey is nice because once it hits the body's temperature, it begins to thin. So it can start out pretty thick, but it'll thin out just a little bit. And it's a very friendly and forgiving material, I guess, that you can use for wound care. And just put some kind of a bandage over that, because obviously you don't want it to, it's tacky and you don't want it to get onto everything else. But you can use that for a real wide range of wounds. If you've got something where you've got some kind of a laceration, then you might be looking for a plant called yarrow. Yarrow is whether you just pick it fresh or whether you've got yarrow powder and you put it in a wound powder, it is wonderful to stop bleeding and heavy bleeding when you've got a deep cut that's like that. You can also make a tincture out of that, and you can take it internally as well if you have a deficient that there may be some internal bleeding, but also shepherd's purse is another one that's often used for that as well. A lot of midwives use shepherd's purse, especially if they think there's a chance of there being some problem with the placenta separating from the uterus and there's a hemorrhage there. So there are herbs that actually do handle the big jobs too. I know that I guess one of my biggest pet peeves is when someone says, oh, herbal medicine, herbs are natural and they work because they're gentle. Well, some do. Some herbs are not quite so gentle. They have a louder voice, and not all of them are. Something like cayenne is maybe not so gentle sometimes, you know, so it's certainly highly effective.
So, Kat, in that section, in your wound care section, in the Prepper's Natural Medicine, you compare and contrast the actions of comfrey and St. John's wort. Could you talk a little bit about both of those and the considerations you have around those?
Absolutely. These are both wonderful, wonderful plants. St. John's wort kind of gets pigeonholed as sort of a mood enhancer. And that's, I think, most people's first, when they hear about St. John's wort, that's what they associate it with. However, it's wonderful for cell proliferation in wound care. And the neat thing about St. John's wort is that it helps to heal from the inside out, which is exactly what you want when you've got a deep wound. You want that wound like a puncture or something that's deep to heal from the inside out. Otherwise, if it heals too quickly on the top layers, like when people start to suture immediately, when you have something like that, you can end up with bacteria and such being trapped in that wound, and then you have to open the thing up again, and it's just a bad day. So comfrey, on the other hand, I mean, if there is an herb out there that helps to regenerate and encourage cell proliferation, especially, you know, with the skin, it's comfrey. And if you use this with a deep wound, you know, let's say you've pulled the tissues together and maybe you've got you've got it just held closed there somehow, whether you've sutured it or maybe, you know, you've got some kind of strip over this and you know maybe you've applied some comfrey, you can heal that too quickly from the outside in. And I kind of save comfrey for other things. For instance, it's wonderful when you put it in a poultice on a sprain. If you suspect a broken bone, I have no issue having comfrey tea. Some people get a little nervous because of some of the alkaloids that are in it. But I, for a short-term use with someone who says they have a broken bone, one of its folk names is knit bone. So if you did somehow have to reset a bone in the field, and, you know, if you have that skill and you do that and someone has a broken bone, I would certainly use that. But you can also put it, so you could make a tea out of that, or you could apply it as a poultice to a wound that way. Or if you are trying to heal skin, I save it for, you know, wounds that are not all that deep, because it's going to heal it very quickly. So anything that, like maybe something like a scrape, anything where there was like an abrasion going across the skin, something like that. Even if it goes a little bit deeper, but just not a deep wound, then you might run a little risk of bacteria being trapped there. For that, I would far prefer to use St. John's wort. The only thing, though, is if you're going to do that, you have to collect the flowers when they're fresh, and then you have to make an infused oil out of that. And from there, you can make your lotions and your salves and so on. But the dry product is better for what it's most known for, which is the mood enhancement.
In case you just tuned in,
you should really get the fresh for the wound care.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Health Watch, and we're talking today to herbalist Kat Ellis about her book, Prepper's Natural Medicine, Life-Saving Herbs, Essential Oils, and Natural Remedies for When There Is No Doctor. So, Kat, let's talk a little bit about pain management. Let's assume that either people don't have access to or have run out of their aspirin and ibuprofen, and they're looking at other alternatives for pain management. What are your thoughts there?
Well, there are a lot of options. Now, just for your regular, you know, everyday aches and pains where you would take an aspirin, there are very easy corollaries to that, the origin of aspirin comes from white willow bark, because there's a chemical in there known as salicin. And that salicin is found in a number of plants. It's not just white willow bark. It's in meadow sweet and in a number of other medicinal trees and so on. But most people, I think, when they get into herbs, you know, hear about white willow bark first, so that's what I'm going to focus on. So white willow bark has salicin in it, and when you take salicin into the body, it's metabolized into salicylic acid. That is the natural form of the chemical used to make aspirin. They've synthesized it into acetyl salicylic acid. That's the active ingredient in aspirin. It's not the exact same thing. It's interesting because there's actually only a very small amount of salicin in white willow bark and in some of these other herbs. So it's actually the synergistic relationship of all of the various chemicals in the plant that I would attribute to, you know, the pain-relieving ability of some of these plants, because aspirin has this artificially high amount of acetyl salicylic acid in it. And I think that's also where some of the risks of taking aspirin also come in. Now, when I've taken white willow bark for a very, very long time, not continually, but I mean over a long period of time for various things. And I find that, and obviously with my clients and so on, they've used it. And overall, I would say that it may take a little bit longer to kick in, but once it does, it has a longer lasting effect, and I have not found that it produces the same stomach reactions that people who, you know, may get an upset stomach and have stomach problems from taking aspirin. It does a wonderful job of relieving pain in general. There's, you know, depending on the type of injury and what caused the pain, that might help me to narrow down what type of herb I might go to. If there's nerve pain involved, I might go to cayenne. Cayenne has capsaicin. Also, if it's muscle pain, capsaicin is wonderful. You know, it helps to, that cayenne helps to warm the tissues up and helps to soothe it away. Maybe I would go for something that's cooling, depending on the situation. Certainly, for those people who are interested in pursuing it. I know some people, there's a stigma associated with the plant, but cannabis. This is an incredible pain reliever. I live on the border of Rhode Island, and they've had medicinal marijuana there for a very long time. I know people who've benefited from really severe and chronic pain from taking that over a period of time, and I've been able to watch, you know, what it does, and it's a very powerful plant, but there are others too. There's also California poppy. It's not quite as strong as its cousin, the opium poppy, but it's much milder in its effect. But it still has pain relieving qualities to it. Let me see. If the pain were something associated with, let's say, an injured muscle, you know, maybe like a spasm or something like that. There's a number of herbs you could use for that. Cramp bark, if it's not too serious. If it's a really, really badly injured, muscle or connective tissue, maybe lobelia, or maybe black or heart, there's a lot of herbs that can assist people when it comes to looking for some type of alternative analgesic. I mean, if you've got a migraine, oh, there's peppermint, and there's feverfew. There's a lot of good options out there.
So let's pivot and talk about a whole nother category. You have a section of Prepper's Natural Medicine where you look at what you call nutritional syrups and also different strategies to boost the immune system. So first, maybe you could tell us what you mean by a nutritional syrup and what they're used for.
Well, you know, I was just trying to come up with a way to describe this. But the thing is that if your body's functioning the way it's supposed to function, you know, then your immune system is going to be a little bit more robust, and you're going to fight off various infections, you know, much more easily than if you weren't. And good health begins with, giving the cells the nutrition that it needs. And, you know, you can certainly stock up on commercially made vitamins. But I think, your listeners are probably aware of some of the issues with absorption of this type of, supplementation. I mean, some are better than others. But if you just go to the, local pharmacy, or you go to your local grocery store and you're just going for bargain basement prices just to stock up on vitamins, you're probably going to get something with a lot of fillers and a lot of other stuff in there, and the nutrients. You may not be getting as much from that, vitamin supplement as you thought you were. They enlist it in the nutritional panel, what's in the tablet. That doesn't necessarily mean that your body's absorbing it at that same level. So you may not be getting what you think you're getting from that. And there are a number of herbs that are high in minerals and very nutritious. And when you combine them with something tasty like a syrup, maybe honey-based or molasses-based, if you're concerned about getting your kids to take herbs, you sweeten things up. You can certainly, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Most herbs that, I shouldn't say most herbs. Herbs have a range of flavors, and children may take to them, and adults too. I think of children a lot because I have small kids, and I'm always trying to figure out how to get them to try different things. And I've got one who takes them very readily and one who's very picky. So when I make things into a syrup, things go down easier. One plant in particular, well, there's several plants, but one plant in particular that I would strongly recommend that people consider keeping for nutritional support would be nettle. Nettle is probably one of the most nutrient-dense plants that I've ever, encountered or read about. When we think of superfoods, we think of things coming from these far-flung places around the globe, and there's all kinds of energy that's used to bring it all to us here, but we've got this plant that grows easily in like semi-shaded areas that, one, is a complete protein. It has a protein profile similar to that of eggs. Certainly the grams are not the same. You'd have to consume a lot of nettles to get the same amount that you would, the same amount of protein that you would get in an egg. But it is a complete protein. It's loaded with minerals. It's something that would round out, if you've ever looked at some of these prepper meals, these like buckets like that will, supply you supposedly with like a month's worth of food or something, or a month's worth of calories in these buckets. They have a place, but they tend to be expensive, and the nutritional profiles are not necessarily as good as you'd like them to be. So supplementing, I think, would certainly help keep people healthy during, let's say, any kind of extended crisis that we might go through. So other herbs that you could include in there would be horsetail, alfalfa, off the top of my head, you've also got red clover you could put in there, red raspberry leaf. And there's a lot of very pleasant tasting ones that you can add to that too. And if you have, a specific concern, you can certainly tailor it for that. Now, I started doing these syrups, not just for my kids, but also for, as an alternative to some of these prenatal vitamins, because I had some prenatal clients and a lot of them were concerned about iron, and a lot of the iron supplements that they had were making them very constipated. So some yellow dock in there, burdock and yellow dock, these would be things you could add to these nutritional syrups. So between that and some molasses, they're getting some extra iron without that constipating feature that comes along with your typical commercially available iron supplement. So I find syrups are just a great way to get a lot of different medicines down.
You're also a big fan of Rosemary Gladstar's fire cider recipe and have a modified yes. version of it in your book. Can you tell our listeners what fire cider is and what it's good for?
Fire cider is this wonderful tonic being strengthening beverage that is attributed to Rosemary Gladstar. She's been teaching it for so many decades, and it's basically, this is an herbal vinegar. It's a very simply made herbal vinegar, and when it's done steeping, once you've done steeping your herbs in there, you can then mix this with some maybe some lemon juice or some lime juice or orange juice, whatever you might want to, or you could leave that out entirely. And you can also mix honey in with it. And then it goes from being an herbal vinegar, which is called an acetum. And if you add honey to it, it then becomes an oxymel, for those who want to know the terms there for it. Anyway, this remedy, it contains, the traditional fire cider contains onions, garlic, horseradish, cayenne, I think I might be forgetting some, ginger root, that's what was in there. And Rosemary's got a wonderful video on YouTube showing how to make it. But all of these really pungent and spicy herbs, they get extracted into this apple cider vinegar. And it's got a sharp taste, your cayenne, you can make it as spicy as you want or not. It does a number of different things in the body. I've heard reported back from various clients, different things, that they had a stronger immune response during cold and flu season, that they had more energy. In a general sense, it just helps everything function better. Some people have said that they had some kind of a cleansing effect from it. They felt lighter after taking it. Some people felt that they had a positive cardiac response with it, with their blood pressure became a little bit less. And the thing is that the recipe is not something that is fixed in stone. This is more like cooking than it is like baking. You don't have to be so precise with measurements. And you can, certainly vary things up. I like to add astragalus because for its immune supportive properties. I like to add Siberian ginseng for its energizing properties. That's how it affects me. I put things in it for people who were concerned about, their cardiac health and their the health of their arteries and veins, and they put things like hawthorn berry in there. And
we're almost out of time, but I would before we end, I just wanted to give you a chance to just direct our listeners to your website and your blog, because I know you do a lot of blogging, and yes. Maybe people would like to interface with some of the information you share there.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is herbalprepper.com, so it's www.herbalprepper.com. And from there, you can shoot me an email if you've got any questions. There's a link to my book that's on there, and there's also links to my podcast that I do every Sunday evening. It's called Herbal Prepper Live. It's on prepperbroadcasting.com. But you can find all that information there on herbalprepper.com.
Well, it's great having you on Health Watch today, Kat.
Thank you so much, Dr. Davis, for having me on.
We are talking today to herbalist Kat Ellis about her book, Prepper's Natural Medicine, Life-Saving Herbs, Essential Oils, and Natural Remedies for When There Is No Doctor. You've been listening to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair Saturday, July 25th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with an after-party on Clinton Street from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The community parade, Metamorphosis, will start at 10:45 a.m. There will also be artisan, craft, and community booths, sidewalk sales, live music, food, and more. Again, that's the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street going until 9 p.m. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And we're going to hear an episode of Food Sleuth Radio. But before we go to that, I want to let you know that there will be a protest against the City of Portland's decision to spend anywhere from $300 million to $1 billion on a new underground water reservoir system. The public is invited to peacefully assemble in and around Portland's City Hall on Wednesday, July 15th at 9:30 a.m. to protest the new water system. Concerns about the new system include possible radon exposure and salmonella contamination. This protest is calling on Governor Kate Brown to mandate that the Oregon Health Authority issue the city an exemption from the EPA's LT.